Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down the system. May us the exit pool. Wake up the silence, maturity.
And welcome to the Star Chamber Show, episode number 66. And so since we have a double six, it's a perfect night for what we're going to be doing after the show with Michael West.
do we go ahead and do the big announcement now?
We didn't even plan that, that it would be the 66th episode. But
no, we didn't.
But before we get into like some banter and news and stuff, I do think that we should lead off with the big news, and I will turn it over to you for that.
Okay. Well, as my faithful readers know, I have been struggling long and hard to bring them the next chapter in the Legacy of the Gods saga, and we are nearing completion. But decided that since I'm not quite in George R.R. Martin territory yet, but it is a bit of a stretch between these books. So we're going to kind of give you guys little tidbits and treasures and Easter eggs along the way to kind of, you know, soften those withdrawal symptoms. And so tonight is the first of those little treasure chests. Tonight at 11 p.m., we will go live with the cover art for The Legacy of the Gods, Book 3, Zeus's Warriors. And this blew my socks off, so I hope it will blow everyone else's socks off. But I think, you know, as good as my cover art has been in the past, this might just be the best cover for anything that I've ever done.
Well, this is what the reaction is going to be to your cover art, I think.
were those banshees? What was that?
That was actually supposed to be a crowd cheer. We're using our art. We just spent half the show's budget on that sound effect. So.
Okay. We're like some NFL teams where we bring in the crowd noise. but yeah, I'm very, very, very excited. And so tonight you will get the front cover art for the new novel and a little, you know, the description that's going to go on the book jacket itself. But it's not going to give too much away, but it is going to hopefully whet your appetite for things to come.
Yeah, I personally also, you know, like that, I've had the pleasure, of course, of seeing it, and have to say that it is really sharp. I think the artist, Natasha Altarici, was just knocked it out of the park. I'm from the outside looking in, so.
Right. I started working with Natasha on my last release, which was my short story collection, Straight Jacket Memories. And so if, you know, as faithful readers know the artwork for that, you know, has, you know, there are people who walk by my table at conventions and stop just because they see that book. I mean, it's just that striking. And as striking as that cover art is, this is, I mean, when I saw this, it was like every, you know, Lord of the Rings, Conan kind of fantasy, you know, you ever had as a kid growing up reading those books where, you know, half the fun of going to the bookstore or the comic store or whatnot was just the covers, you know, and those striking, you know, covers with the fantasy artwork. This is that. This is amazing.
And it also, I think the cool thing is, because like I said, the artist in the first two was Matthew Perry before he got, like I said, really busy out in the West Coast with some of his production work. And Natasha did this one, but I do see where, like I said, you know, looking at the three of them together, they do fit together. So it was kind of cool that, you know, that, you know, like I said, that he was able to, you know, the flow between the three, he was able to continue with the look, even though it was it's a new artist. So I thought that was a
right
kind of touch, you know, to, you know, that,
yeah,
you know, that was there.
Yeah. And, you know, she's also going to be doing the illustrations, you know, that, appear, you know, as the, my faithful readers have come to know, the illustrations can get pretty wild, for, the Legacy of the Gods books. This one will be no exception. I can't wait to see what she does with those pieces as well.
Oh, you're gleeful about this. Oh man.
Well, there is one scene in particular that let's put it this way: people who saw Joe Dante's The Howling.
Mm-hmm. My favorite werewolf movie of all time. So I'm
there. You go. There you go. You remember there was a scene by a campfire?
Uh huh. Yes, I do.
Yeah. We're gonna have fun.
Actually, I have a funny story for you on that. It's kind of an anecdote. My parents would kind of a little bit censor me. I love werewolves, and so they let me watch The Howling, but they actually made me walk up to the top of the stairs during like a sex scene because I was a kid. And so what they didn't realize is that they're kind of like armoire thing in the back of the room had a reflective surface. So when I went up to the top of the stairs, I could actually see it in the reflection. So I did see said scene as a young kid. And I didn't tell them that until many years later because I didn't want to give up my secret.
Well, I remember the first time I saw it, I was at a friend's, I was like, what, 10, 11, no, I would have been like 12 years old at the time. I was at a friend's Halloween party, and they had cable, and we didn't at the time. And we were flipping channels, and we actually caught like the last 20 minutes of the movie. And I was just blown away. It was basically from the big transformation to the end.
Oh, wow.
And I was just blown away by it. And I was like telling my parents, I said, oh, we've got to get this movie. We've got to see the whole thing. And so I said, okay, well, we're going to watch it first. So they watch it. And I said, what'd you think? What, can I watch it? And they're like going, you know what you saw that movie? And I said, yeah. They said, that's all you can see of that movie.
Yeah, I got censored too, but I outsmarted them a little bit. But
yeah. Well, I used to, when we did finally get cable, I remember setting my alarm for like in my room for like, you know, 2 or 3 a.m. or whenever the movie was coming on, and or 1:30 or whenever it was. And so I would, you know, hear the alarm, like the first beep, and I'd shut it off real quick. And then I'd sneak down the stairs. And of course, the stairs were creaking and everything else. So that's how I watched things like Escape from New York and, you know,
nice.
Prom Night and all kinds of different.
Nice. Oh yeah.
When I was a kid.
That was a golden.
Speaking of creative, sure. we have a guest.
Yes, we do. And actually, when I bring her on, I want to say you know, we feature a lot of different types of writers on the show, some with really extensive, you know, resumes and whatnot. And we thought, Michael and I thought it'd be fun to bring an author on who is very talented, who has published work now, and but is at the start of their publishing career, and as far as being an author. And so kind of give a perspective from an author that's kind of like at the beginning of that road, as opposed to some of the ones that we've had that, you know, have, you know, many books out and have been in it for a while. So this is kind of a fun night because we get to have somebody that's kind of like really enthusiastic and hasn't been through all the horrific stuff that you and I have yet.
Yeah.
And,
not yet, jaded.
Yeah. But I met her first at Mid-South Con down in Tennessee, and I was having a lot of fun down there with Alexander Brown. I actually met her through him, and she hung out with me at the Seven Star Press table a lot that weekend. I got to know her, and she was just absolutely just wonderful. And I'm really, really excited to be able to introduce her tonight. She does have a story in Southern Haunts 3, and that's the latest anthology in Alexander Brown's franchise there, and he co-edited that with Louise Myers. But she is really wonderful. Writer, very talented, and she is just, like I said, she's going to catch fire. But without further ado, I'd like to welcome Melissa Robinson to the Star Chamber Show. You are now live on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Here you are.
Hey.
Well, it's been a while since I've actually gotten to hear your voice. You know, I know that we keep in touch quite a bit through text and you know, Facebook and stuff, but it's actually good to actually hear you. It's wonderful.
I would actually agree. I'm definitely more of a texter than a talker.
Well,
more of a writer than a talker.
The bad news is on podcasts, you have to talk.
Sure. But I have two awesome guys to keep me company and keep me talking, so.
Well, Michael's definitely awesome. I don't know about me. I'm just hanging out here. He's the
according
one with the badass.
Sister, you're, according to your sister today, you're awesome.
I did all right by her. I did okay, yeah. We got hit with the snowfall, and I took care of her with her car issues and this and that and the other. So, but I was kind of pleased with that post she made, a little shout-out, but.
I had to be the white knight today too and take my wife to and from work because of the snow. I have the four-wheel drive, so.
How about you, Melissa? Are you enjoying bad weather or good weather as we speak?
Right now it looks like spring and feels like winter. It's kind of confusing in Louisiana. Everything is green, but it's cold.
Well, I'll take the green.
Okay, let's get some perspective here. What do you consider cold?
Yeah, that's true.
For me, cold, let me see, right now, yeah, it's like 48.
Okay, that would be, that's like 48 degrees warmer than it is here, so.
Yeah, same for here. Oh, my God, yeah, it's very, I don't even want to know. It's very cold here. But I'm definitely in for the evening and here.
I would,
I'm not
I
doing the show
a,
outdoors.
I would be sprinting down the street in a swimsuit right now if it was freezing. And no one wants that.
It's in the summer, it gets to 110.
Well, there you go. So, yeah.
So, Melissa.
I've been in Louisiana, so it's very humid down there as well.
It's all the water. It stays humid down here.
Yeah.
You and I will have to go see her at BayouCon, one of those kind of cool events at some point, Michael. But
yeah, I'll have to branch out.
Oh, wow, we're off to pull her with us to StokerCon in Vegas this May. That would be fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
But there will be some news about that, incidentally, coming up soon. But I digress. We started our path as far as our friendship, Melissa, at Mid-South Con. Was that your first convention? Because I couldn't remember specifically if that was your first convention as an attendee or not.
It was actually my second. My first was the previous year at MCFC, actually in Memphis.
Oh,
met
cool.
a lot of all people.
Now, is that
I
where
met
you met
awesome
Alexander?
Yeah. I actually met Alex when I was living in Vicksburg.
Okay. So you met him actually in Vicksburg, because that's who I met you, that you through was actually Alex. So that's where
right.
that's where we
yeah.
actually got introduced. And just your luck, you fell on the night that Michael and I were co-hosting instead of Alex. So, I don't know if we're the A team or the B team, but we're here. but that was a fun
cool.
weekend. And, yeah, that was a fun weekend. And at that point, because we're going to kind of go through this kind of road with you as you, you know, kind of approach the outset of your writing path as a published author. Where were you at that point when I had first met you as a writer?
At that point, I was working on completing some short stories to try to get the ball rolling. I just submitted for Southern Hots Part 2, but Alexander thought that particular story needed to be expanded into a novel, which is one of the three projects I'm currently working on.
Cool. Because yeah, I knew you were writing away when I met you, and but at that point, if I'm correct, you hadn't had anything published yet, correct?
Right, right.
Okay, yeah. And now we are, of course, very proud to have one of your stories in Southern Haunts 3. So is that your first published story, or is that, or where does that one fit in on your path here?
That was my second one. I had one published through Prose.
Okay, Prose with Tommy Hancock and
right, right.
his wonderful gang down there.
Yeah, absolutely. They got me into their Winter Spring 2014 edition.
Very cool. So, let's start there then. How did you go about that process for your very first story that got published and your reaction to it and all that kind of thing? Tell us the story behind the story of your first publication.
I actually met Tommy at MCFC, and like you, we got to talking over the weekend, and I had shown Alex one of my stories, and after I left the con, I actually finished it and sent it to Tommy, and he loved it and put it into the online magazine. My reaction to it, I actually scared the daylights out of my girlfriend at the time. When I saw the announcement, I shrieked at the top of my lungs and jumped and ran into the kitchen.
Did you get that on video by chance?
No, thankfully. But,
almost envision you doing that, but
I still have that giggly, happy stars in my eyes.
Yes, I've seen your giggly, happy look too, so that's all I can picture that. So,
are we sure it was my giggly, happy or my giggly, drunk?
I think you were completely sober. But oh god, that was fun. Yeah, Mid South Con, because that was the night I had the blue stuff for the first time, and you all were with
me.
That night. Yeah, that was great.
Was this an Apex party?
No. It was. We were. Oh god. Literally Underworld. I know we went to their thing for a while because they always help host a party down there, and I can't remember. We went to more than one party that night. If I remember correctly. Is that right? Because I know
we did.
Jen Mullen Hill was with us, and Alex, and you, and me, and we had a great time.
I think we ended up at about three parties before we finally crawled back to the hotel room.
Yes, and we still made our panels the next day in the dealer room. It was, yeah, very impressive. But,
surprisingly.
Oh god, if you've ever hung out with all of us, like Jen Mulvihill and Alex, and we are all a bunch, I can say that for sure. but that was a lot of fun. But how much time was there between the Pro Se story and then the one for us as far as Southern Haunts 3? About how much of a time difference was there in those two? For when that?
Probably about a year.
About a year,
between
okay.
Between the two. And then in the meantime, I've been working on a short story collection. And I just started a new, how can I put this, a crime drama novel.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe your writing as far as genre-wise and style-wise?
I kind of go for a broad spectrum. My short stories tend to lean more toward folklore and horror. The novel I'm leaning more towards suspense.
Very cool. So do you like kind of mixing it up a little bit, or what kind of draws you to doing different things like that?
I do. It's a little more difficult for me to draw out the folklore. I like to start things off with a bang. With the novel, it was a literal bang. My character got shot in the leg within the first couple paragraphs. But...
Yeah, we'll defer to Michael to grill you on the horror side of things, but yeah, I wanted to give people you know, our audience an idea of the type of writing that you do. Do you have a certain way you describe your style, or you know, maybe you can talk about some of your influences and you know that may you know be you know big on you.
Actually, Alexander S. Brown is a big influence on my short stories. He's actually compared me to George R. R. Martin in that I have this tendency to kill off my characters, generally all of them.
I was just going to say, I've always found that it's easier to kill off all your characters in a short story than it is in a novel because people are a little bit less invested in them.
Exactly. And that's one of the issues I'm having with the novel itself is I find so many ways that I can kill them off and so many perfect scenarios where I could kill them off, but I have to leave them alive for different scenes. So far, I've tried to kill off my main character 3 times.
It's like the... It's like the first Christmas episode of South Park where they kept saying, Kenny, go over there and do things. And he kept thinking that each scenario was gonna kill Kenny, and then it didn't.
Exactly.
See, and here I was waiting for Melissa to say, well, my problem is that when I got halfway through the novel, I realized all my main characters are dead.
Hoping that doesn't happen. That's not going to end well.
No.
That's when you go back to your publisher and say, about that, it's really a novella.
good tactic.
Close it out, do part two with new characters.
Yeah. You can do like American Horror Story and just it's the same characters, just in different roles.
Right.
That's a good veteran tactic, though. It goes from novel to novella, and there you go. You're done. You got it.
Well, that's what. Whenever I hit the 40,000 to 50,000 word mark on a novel, I'm like, going, okay, you know, if I ended it now, it would be a good novella. I don't have to go on anymore.
And on that segue, we are going to announce that Zeus's Warriors is a novella because.
It'll be out tomorrow.
Be surprised, Melissa. We didn't want to tell you that, but yeah, we want to send a big breaking news thing. Oh,
surprise!
Yeah, that's the you thought the cover art was the big news. No, that was the breaking news.
Yeah, that's the big announcement.
Right. Oh dear God. But But so how is it going with your first novel progression right now? You said you have a little bit of issues with lots of ways to kill people off, but how is it going overall?
It's actually going smoothly right now. I'm just working around my work schedule, so it's either wake up early or stay up late and write.
What is your pattern? Because a lot of writers that are at your stage, you know, of course, are also working, you know, day jobs and things like that. How do you fit? What's your process as far as when you write? You know, how often? You know, and how long do you typically get to write each day? That, you know, just basically everything about your process.
Typically, if I'm working a day shift, for one thing, my bosses are awesome and they let me write on downtimes at work. So if I'm working a day shift, I'll have a couple hours in the morning. I can bring my laptop to work and write then, and then I have an hour or two in the evenings. Same thing if I'm working a night shift. You know, wake up, get everything going, get to work, and then I'm able to write in the downtime. On my off days, I try to at least stare at the screen for 2 hours. Sometimes I get 2 hours of solid writing. Sometimes I just kind of stare at the screen for 2 hours.
Do you have any, like, quirks or habits? And a lot of writers, you know, like myself, I have, you know, I always listen to music, and there's patterns that I have when I write. Do you have a certain place you write, or any kind of, you know, like I said, habits when you write?
I typically put my earphones in, and I will play Nox Arcana's Necronomicon album. It always just adds that creepy feel to wherever I'm at. I generally like to write in my room because it's the quietest place in my house. Just kind of shut the door and block everything out and just go for it.
So you're actually like me.
I'm not
one of those people that can write in Starbucks. I never can understand that. I look at my friends that are writers
no.
and write, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to the coffee shop, and I'm like, how do you do it? I get so distracted. I'm in crowds like that.
My ADD is too bad. Coffee shops are for coffee and email max.
Yeah.
I'm too busy with people watching.
I get too distracted myself, but that's interesting. So you do actually have a little bit of a pattern. You like to write alone, and you also write with music, which I think Michael does as well, right?
Yeah, I usually alternate between hair metal, Sirius XM, and movie scores.
Nice.
It just depends. Sometimes, if I'm really focused, it either helps to have an album that I've listened to 1,000 times where it just kind of bleeds into the background and I'm not really, you know, sometimes if it's a newer song, I'm too focused on, you know, if it's something that I really like that's newer, I'm too focused on the lyrics or too focused on the song to really get into what I'm doing. But if I'm one of focus more on the writing itself. I like things that either don't have any words or, you know, it's like a album that I've heard 1,000 times and I don't, it just, you know, like I said, bleeds into the background.
Something like
that's
the Flash Gordon soundtrack.
I've listened to the Flash Gordon one before. I have probably close to 1,000 soundtracks. So
nice.
Yeah, it's thankfully I have iTunes now where I can load everything up on it and I don't have to. Back in the old days when you had to like actually put a CD in your CD-ROM.
Oh, I still do that, but I, you know, well, at my carousel, my disc changer, but
do you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I still
do.
I mainly now have iTunes on my laptop, so I just kind of load. I've loaded them all up on that, and that way I can just access whatever I want. Sometimes I'll have theme days where it's like all, you know, Disturbed albums or all Jerry Goldsmith scores or something like that.
Or Menudo's Greatest Hits or something very different.
That would yield some interesting horror stories.
Yeah, things you can write to that. Oh, my
Menudo's
God.
Menudo's like a live-action Logan's Run. It's like, you know, they get to a certain age and then it's time to go to Carousel.
Yep. Good stuff. But back to your writing path. Tell us a bit about the short story that you did for Alex in Southern Haunts 3. That's another one that's on your resume now.
Southern Haunts 3 was Dr. Bones, who was actually a Vicksburg legend, one that I'd heard about through Alex. I actually got a friend of mine to take me to the site. I'm one of those weird authors that like to go on scene and get a feel for the atmosphere of where this stuff actually took place.
Mm-hmm.
Very creepy place. The house was completely gone, but the land was still there, and just the feeling of the entire place was just completely creepy. But the style that I wrote him in was actually how I heard his voice.
Wow. Yeah, because I like that story very much. I've read it. The thing about that, the other thing I was going to ask you about that story is Courtney Weiss did an illustration for each of the short stories in the book. How'd you feel about the illustration she did for yours?
I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. I basically only told her that I wanted the tree to be incorporated in some way and free reign for the rest of it. She did an absolutely fantastic job.
Yeah, because I thought that was one of my personal favorite illustrations of the collection. I mean, I think she did a fantastic job all the way through, but I that's one of the ones that I really thought was, you know, one of my personal ones. And, you know, that was a neat touch with that. Have you gotten feedback on your story now that you're, you know, now the book's kind of out and you're, you know, seeing it out there? What are you hearing back on it?
Most people that have read it, like around here, said that they loved it. I've learned not to take Amazon reviews personally.
Oh.
The one that I read said it was an okay story, but it wasn't their favorite because it was difficult to read, which I can completely see. If you're unfamiliar with the dialect, it will be.
Well, actually, that's a bit of a veteran type of statement, though, because a lot of writers that are, you know, just underway on, you know, having publication credits tend to really obsess over Amazon reviews, and I know Michael and I have read some things that have really been head scratchers for both of us review wise, and
yeah,
you know, I mean, I could talk about a few that just stunned me, you know, as far as like, and I'm talking in an objective sense, not disagreeing with somebody's taste, but just, you know, just stuff that's just completely out of left field, and it's hard,
right,
you know, to go through those moments. And I think it's really interesting that you already have the perspective that you aren't really, you know, like I said, you got a healthy view toward, you know, the Amazon review thing.
I mean, I can't take it personally. Everyone has different tastes and things they like and things they don't like. And I will definitely agree, you know, for someone who is unfamiliar with the dialect down here, it is a difficult read.
Well, my favorites are always the ones where they just say sucked, and that's the extent of the review. I'm like, okay,
yeah. Good critical review right there.
Yeah, I can learn from that one.
Exactly. Even if it does suck, tell me what sucked about it, so I know if I need to make changes.
Right.
If it sucks to the point that I just need to quit writing and don't quit my day job, then
well, I've always told, like, new writers, not new writers, but newly published writers, I'm like, go ahead and read Neil Gaiman's reviews and George R. R. Martin's and all the top-selling ones. You will literally find hundreds of one- and two-star reviews for those kind of authors. Literally,
right.
Hundreds of one- and two-star reviews. And like, you know, some that they're calling these guys, you know, you'll find reviews where they call them the worst author in the genre. I mean, and it's, you know, stuff that's just extraordinary. And I've always told new writers to read that. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, or if you want to be really depressed, read the reviews of Bram Stoker's Dracula on Goodreads.
Oh God. Elaborate on that, because that's actually a healthy story for young writers to hear about.
Oh my God. People get on, there's so many reviews on there you just read and they're like going, yeah, I read Twilight and I loved it and I wanted to read the original, but this really sucks. And I'm just like, oh. I'm just, you know, it just makes you want to commit Harry Carey.
Oh yeah, I've heard a few about Tolkien that call him, you know, the absolute worst fantasy author they've ever encountered. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
But,
absolute blasphemy.
Yeah, I mean, but the point is that, you know, I think it's healthy for newer writers to read those kind of reviews just to give them a perspective, so that when they do encounter some, you know, harsh reviews and things like that, they don't necessarily, like I said, let it sink them or anything like that.
Actually, I don't know about you, but if I go on to an Amazon or Goodreads or whatever, and I see a book that has, you know, 55 reviews and they're all 5-star, I'm like, okay. What's going on?
This author is paying their friend to do reviews.
Yeah, because there's no book that everyone loves.
No, you're going to get some stratification, I mean, eventually.
Yeah.
For sure. And I actually think it's actually not a bad thing when a writer is getting 30, 40, 50 reviews and starts to get, you know, a bad one here or there. It actually, you know, definitely, you know, it actually makes it look, I think, more palatable to a new reader who sees that. Doing exactly what Michael said, you know, somebody that sees that, it's more of an organic, honest kind of thing than somebody that stacked it with 100 that they're, you know, bought 100 good reviews, which is
I don't really pay any attention to the, I mean, if the bad reviews are pointing out something that took them out of the story or whatnot, I like those. But what really gets me are the bad reviews where it's bad reviews of Amazon service or something like
oh,
that.
God.
It has nothing at all to do with the book itself.
Oh, yeah.
Those are frustrating.
Occasionally you get the zany ones where somebody will say, I really like this story a lot, and they'll give it like a 1-star review, and you wonder, what the heck are they clicking on?
Okay. I hate to see what you didn't like.
But
there's somebody out there they've reviewed a couple of mine, and I've seen other reviews that they've done, but their review system is either like 4 stars or 1 star. And the review is, you know, it's either I enjoyed it or I didn't like it. And that's like the extent of the review. It's like they give 1 star and they say, I didn't like it. Or they give 4 stars and said, you know, I liked it. And that's the extent of the reviews.
Yeah, it really gives you a good idea.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, I hope I get them when they get on the right side of the bed that morning.
Well, let me ask you this, Melissa. What did you learn after having 2 stories out that you may not have known before you had these 2 stories out? What ways did you grow, you think, as a on your career aspect from that experience?
I've definitely learned that trying to work on 5 stories at once is a way to get absolutely nothing done.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm trying to keep it down to 1 to 2 projects at a time. I've also learned to actually have to sit down and write something every day, even if it's just 2 words. I read something today I found fascinating. It's leave, whenever you stop writing, leave a sentence unfinished. That way you have to write 2 or 3 words before you actually have to be, quote-unquote, creative. They were saying that was a way to help out new authors like me.
Well, another thing I find is that, if you're really struggling, you might want to see if maybe you're just writing from the wrong person's point of view. Because I had a situation within the last week where I was struggling. It's like I would try and I would not like anything, and I would try and I would not like anything. I'd get like a couple of paragraphs into it, and I couldn't get any further. And then finally I said, well, maybe if I try it from the other person in the conversation's point of view and see how that gets me. And I started working on that, and I did the whole chapter in like a day.
Very nice.
Yeah, and sometimes you just have to. It's weird because as a writer, you can say this to other writers, and they're like, oh yeah. But if you said this to anyone else, they'd like back away from you slowly. But it's like you just have to listen to the voices in your head and see which one has something to say, and then go with that.
Generally. That's actually a good segue there.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Melissa.
That's actually one thing I found easier with this novel. I have 2 main characters that I'm doing from 2 different points of view. So when one stops talking to me, I just start talking to the other one.
Right.
Which I was actually nervous about that until I started reading Stephen's book, The Exodus Gate. Phenomenal book, by the way. When I get done, you're definitely getting a 5-star review.
Oh, well, thank you. But as we say, it's definitely an ensemble cast, though. It's definitely got a multiple cast.
That's one reason I like ensemble cast too, is because there's always someone there that will talk to you, and so if you're not having luck with this person, then just skip to the next chapter and come back to it and work from the other person's point of view.
Well, that's for me as a writer is a stark difference when I did Heart of a Lion, because I literally followed one character the entire book. I mean, there is no other perspective in it. It goes straight with Raiden, and that was so different from writing, almost like George R. R. Martin does, threaded ensemble cast style, with the other main novels that I have. And so, I mean, that was a lot of fun to do as a writer. But again, like Michael said, you've got one, you don't have the option of going to another path in that instance. You've got to stick with one, and it's got its own challenges, I think.
Right. It's like I've tried writing in first person a couple of times and I've never liked the results. My hat goes off to people who can write whole novels in first person.
How is your novel styled, Melissa? Is it what, third person, first person?
It's actually first person through both characters.
Nice. Michael, I'm going to have to ask you to chat with Melissa because we have a caller. I'm going to have to go screen here. So I will be right back.
Oh, okay. you said you're about halfway through this novel?
I'm about a third through it.
A third through it?
I still keep trying to kill off all the characters.
Now, when you write, do you have an idea of where you're going, or do you just kind of freestyle it and say, well, I'm going to put the characters in this situation and just see where it takes me?
I basically just kind of put the characters in the situation and see where they end up. I've actually had difficulties in the past of trying to force them to do something that they didn't really want to do, and I ended up having to delete half a story and start over.
Yeah, I tend to have an ending in mind, and that ending may change three or four times before I get there. But for me, it's like if you don't know where you're going, you don't know. At least, the way I write it, the way I approach it, if you don't know where you're going, how do you know when you got there? I've read too many books from people that I know write kind of, you know, seat of their pants kind of, you know, they come up with a character and a situation and they just see where it takes them. And, you know, sometimes you'll read those books and I'm not saying that your book would be this way, but I this is a problem, you know, that I know I would run into in that scenario is that you can see where they've kind of written themselves into a corner where it's like, okay, I've gotten to this point. I don't know where to go from here, kind of a thing.
Well, good news, Michael. I do know where we're going to go from here because we have a very special, special guest caller who's going to commemorate something very special, which I am not going to say what that is either, because I'm going to let this caller do that. So, Melissa, surprise, you have a guest caller
Happy
who is live.
Happy birthday, Melissa.
Hi, thank you.
I'm so proud of you. You are doing so well. I haven't been able to listen to the whole interview tonight because I was working on my book and all that good stuff, but I plan to listen to it tomorrow and share it. So I don't want to hog your limelight and all that good stuff. I just wanted to say happy birthday, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you so much. Guys, this caller right here is the reason I am where I am.
We should mention who he is, first of all. Go ahead, Melissa. Introduce this fellow, because I know you know who it is.
This fantastic fellow who has called to wish me a happy birthday is none other than Alexander S. Brown. Yeah. One of the best horror authors of our age.
Oh, you're making my cheeks turn red. It's blushing. It's coming through all the blood that I have caked on me. Oh, thank you.
Have you been doing live research again?
Yeah, I have. And, you know, I was hoping that all the blood splatters would cover up the fact that I can blush very easily. But, no, you succeeded again. So. Well, I hope you're enjoying your first time on the Star Chamber show, and I hope you're going to ride up to Kentucky with me for Imaginarium.
Yes, she
is.
That's
awesome.
Required.
Absolutely.
That's mandatory. I'm stepping
awesome.
In there.
Well, I will get the iPod playlist ready, so just be ready for it.
Absolutely. Down to Bayou Con and up to Imaginarium.
Yes. All right, well, I will let y'all get back to the chat and everything. And once again, happy birthday, Melissa. And hey, Michael. Hey, Stephen. It's great to hear your voice tonight.
Can you hear you, Alex?
Hey.
I'm glad you haven't driven yourself to the asylum yet with your latest magnum opus. I'm glad you're still alive.
Yeah, it's finally coming together. And it's just to the point now where I'm having problems with a few paragraphs where I'm like, all right, I'm going to have to describe this a little more, or I'm going to have to make it just flow into the next paragraph easier. Some of the areas, it just seems like too hard of a chop, and I have no one but myself to blame with that one. So anyway, it'll be soon in your hands, probably at least God, I keep saying, oh, it'll be in your hands next week. It'll be in your hands next week. But in about 2018. 2 weeks, it'll probably be in your hands. All right.
Well,
y'all have a
bourbon and relax, Alex, and celebrate Melissa's birthday. We want to definitely celebrate that.
Well, totally. I have that right here.
Yeah.
Here we
go. You need to get into his hands, Alex, so that I don't have to turn this into a novella on my end.
Yeah.
Yeah, you missed that, but Michael had an announcement, a cover reveal, but what we didn't announce until later in the show is that he's going to truncate his novel into a novella now. So.
No, that's pretty much what I had to do. I had to turn my novel into a novella, too. So.
It's a precedent. Well, I'll make Michael feel better now.
Well, you know, Michael, you know what? Sometimes it just does not work as a long piece. It just doesn't. And I've had to learn that the hard way with this book. So,
well, while you were on the air,
novella, it's a novella.
Switch to your editor hat. Tell us about how the first time you did not accept Melissa's story because you felt like it should have been a novel material. As an editor, comment on that, and then comment on your acceptance of her story for Volume 3. That would be interesting.
Okay. Well, pretty much with the first story that she had submitted for Volume 2, there was just too much going on in it for it to be a short story. The characters seemed like they were strong characters, but you had multiple different subjects going on. You had a lot of background from each character going on. And it was just way too much to fit into 14 pages. And it would be better if she could stretch that out into a novel so that we could really indulge in the background of these characters and also learn about the subjects of which each of the characters are tackling and how they're coming at it from the different angles, such as what she portrayed in that story. So for a short story, it was just too much. And at the same time, I told her it's the potential of this for a novel. I look at it as being a synopsis. And as a matter of fact, there's another author that I said no to for the exact same reason, that the story was way too crammed to be a short story. Now, with the short story that I did accept for Southern Haunt 3, which is her story, The Doctor's Inn, I believe that's the title we settled on. We kind of changed titles quite a bit. It was Dr. Bones we finished with, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. With that one, she nailed it more so because it was just one subject. It was a simple subject at that, and she allowed the character development to shine through from one person's perspective versus multiple persons' perspectives. And the story had a good flow, had good dialogue, and the character development was just absolutely chilling. And that's exactly what I look for when someone submits to Southern Haunt. And I've also told her she needs to have a story for Part 4 ready and try to follow the same formula as the story she submitted to Volume 3, which I believe she has, because it's a story that you've kind of dabbled with before, I do believe, correct?
Yes, I'm just tweaking it a little bit before I give it to you.
Yes, I know which one it is, and I'm happy with it. Yes. All right, so we're good.
But I think there's a good lesson for newer writers in this, because as you heard, she had a situation where she did not get accepted by an editor, but it did not deter her from going to that editor's next project, and she got accepted. So there's actually a little bit of a lesson for, you know, not getting too down, you know, if you don't get accepted on the first go around. So I think that's a cool thing.
Well,
to mention.
And I've had that happen to me before too, where I submit something to an editor, and they're like, "Well, you know, I didn't think this was right for this project, but you know, send me something else. Send me something in the future." And that's. You know, the next best thing to an acceptance is that kind of a rejection where, you know, the editor, you know, liked what you're doing. It just wasn't right for that particular project, but that's somebody that you can go to in the future and hopefully, build a relationship with them.
Which is the case here.
And with the story that Melissa had originally submitted for Volume 2, I really do hope that you do something with it and you expand it out. I believe that you have been. You have been speaking to me about expanding out a short story, and I hope that this one was it, because
it has
a lot of potential. Good. It has a lot of potential, and you can take it so much further than where you did as a short.
I think you and I had actually spoken about turning it into a trilogy into three different locations.
Now, yeah, that was something that I had mentioned to you, that we could do a series off of the book, and you could just take it and run with it for however many volumes that you wanted, because you just have that many characters and that many backgrounds coming together as one story. So I would be happy to see that in full length. And, of course, once you get it published, you can go in and put me down for a copy, just saying.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll buy one, too. So that's two copies sold.
That is something I would like new writers and new published authors to learn. Not all rejection is bad.
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely.
Not all rejection is bad. Not all bad reviews are bad. You know, they can help you learn and grow as an author.
Well, that and also, like, let's say, for example, someone gives you a 1-star review and they say that the book was awful, or in my case, you know, it was repulsive or whatever. That can be to my benefit, because, you know, if someone come across that, they're like, oh, wow, this book is repulsive. I'm going to buy it.
Well, that happened to me. I had a negative review of Poseidon's Children because the person got on there and like going, I cannot believe, you know, I downloaded this and I got 3 pages into it and I erased it from my file because, you know, I was not told that this book had sex in it. And so I had a lot of sales after that.
Oh, Michael, you dirty birdie.
I think the line that got me was like going, you know, I expected this to be about Greek mythology. I had no idea there was sex.
That was the review.
Like, did you not read any Greek mythology?
Apparently,
that's all the gods did.
I think 90% of the problems in Greek mythology was because Zeus couldn't keep it in the sand.
Exactly.
Oh, God, that's too funny. I remember that review. That was classic.
Oh,
yeah. So bad reviews can be good.
Yeah, the Kevin Goddess and Jess had a field day with that.
Oh, yes, they did.
And besides, let's look at it this way. There's some book out there. It's like about the how many shades of gray it is. I'm not going to say what the name is, but we pretty much know. And it has tons of bad reviews, but it's still a great book that people buy. I'm not saying it's great in my perspective, but, you know, everyone else is like, it's a great book.
speaking on that, somebody has made a video. They've taken the trailer for 50 Shades of Grey and put Mr. Bean into it as Mr. Grey.
Oh my God.
Oh, it is hysterical. I was laughing until I cried. So
I would watch that.
I mean, it's on my page. It's on my Facebook page. But you can find it. But it is hysterical. It is hysterical.
As far as finding that, though, we want to be able to find Melissa. So with 90 seconds left, Melissa, tell us where people can find you online.
I'm on Facebook. You can find me, just search Melissa Robinson. I have a picture of Southern Haunts Part 3 as my profile picture. From there, I can just add you to my writer's page.
And Twitter as well?
Yes, I'm on Twitter at SouthernVoice6. I'm also on Instagram at SouthernVoice6.
Okay, spell that, though, because people may not spell it correctly.
The boy is spelled B-O-I.
B-O-I, yeah. You know, I want to make sure people knew that so they, you know, definitely could find you. So, but is there anything you'd like to say in closing? Because we are, coming near the end here. It's been great to have you, Melissa.
Other than happy birthday.
Here.
And happy birthday.
Thank you. It's been an awesome end to a great birthday. You guys have really made my night, and yeah, I'm hoping to hear more about y'all in the future.
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
Thanks for joining us.
Now go and party now. Go tear it up now and have some fun.
All right, well, y'all have a great night.
Have a great
all
day.
Right.
Thank you. Happy birthday.
11 p.m. 11 p.m. book reveal, book cover.
11 p.m.
Yes.
Night, everybody.
Night.